the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Hey, welcome, folks. It is time for Bucket Strategy Investing. Back with more of the program, giving you the money information that you need. We hope to help you get through retirement. That's our goal anyway, and I would hope we would succeed. Once again, today, we got Professor Rick Plum standing by with me, Johnny Dean, ready to take your phone calls and your emails. A lot of stuff to talk about, of course. When is there not? Coming up this hour, we're going to be getting into the whole concept of marriage later in life. And no, we're not going to provide marriage counseling here, okay? That's not what we do. Oh, occasionally Professor Plum has told people for financial reasons it might be better if you get a divorce, but he's not advocating that. All right, we're not really doing that, although maybe. We're going to come from the financial angle, which I guess is what you would expect us to do, right? So you've been married maybe a couple of different times, or maybe just now you found the perfect person and you're 60 years old. Took you all that time. Maybe you got kids from a prior marriage, or your new spouse does, or any one of, I think, probably 100 different scenarios that might crop up. So what do you do to plan and protect yourself financially? We're going to talk about that. Our number here in studio, if you have questions on that, anything else at all, doesn't matter. Show's getting started. Every line is open right now. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. You should take advantage of the opportunity to call the show because you have that right now. You can also send us your emails at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link. It's right there near the top of the page, and we'll get it here at the studio and answer it right here on the program. Professor Plum, the great and powerful. I wasn't going to do that, and then I left it in. Back again this hour, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, I remind you that your retirement needs are vastly different from anyone else's. Of course, since no two situations are alike, it is important that you have a retirement plan that focuses specifically on your goals as an individual. And with Lucia Capital Group, you have access to an entire network of brain trust advisors all across the country, and they're ready to help you out. You can call them directly if you want, off the air. Their number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Pardon me. Schedule an appointment to see where you and your retirement plan stand. Or if you just want to ask a money question, either one. 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, once again, write this down because this is the important one now. 877-PLANNER. P-L-A-N-N-E-R. So you walk into a marriage at age 55, 50. I don't know what it is. I've known people, Professor Plum, who have said they're going to stay single their entire lives, and they do so right up until the time they don't. And they're probably mid-50s. One was in mid-50s. And the other one was probably almost 60 years old. And they didn't really see any problem with that, except the first thing that cropped up was, well, I've got a house and she's got a house, and now I'm not sure what we're going to do with it. And who's going to own what? And all of a sudden, some issues start cropping up.
Financial issues do come up. How do you go about paying the bills? You're used to paying your way through everything, and so you're used to paying the bills. The individual you're marrying is probably used to paying their bills. How do you start going ahead? Do you create a joint account? Do you? I've seen it done lots of different ways, but this is one of those things where you need to talk. You need to be on the same page.
Well, let's talk for just a second. First of all, there are a number of different ways to go, including debt, which I'll get to in just a little bit. But pensions and new survivorship type issues.
Well, depending upon how much later in life, obviously, if you're retired, you're receiving a pension. You made a choice when you were single. Maybe you took the life only option. Most pensions don't allow you to go back in and allow for changing your pension to a joint life option at that point. So if you're getting married at 65, 68, 70, where you took your pension at 60, you took the single life because you were what John was talking about, I'm single, I'm never going to get married, or I'm never going to go through marriage again. It was too painful losing somebody or too painful getting rid of them, whichever way it was. I'm just never going to get married. Then you get married again because it happens. The pension may already be set in stone. So now you've got to find a way to potentially look at, okay, what do I need to provide for this individual if something does happen to me? But there's several time horizons we have to deal with when we're starting to set up a financial life. The financial life is first now. What are we going to do about the bills now? What are we going to do about the assets that we have now? You know, John mentioned that he has a house, she has a house. Are they going to live in one or the other of those houses, or are they going to sell both of those houses and then move into a new one that is their home? And so what happens? Can they sell the house and get an exclusion? Now that they're married, they're a married couple filing a joint return in many respects, do we still get the home exclusion, the $250,000 capital gain tax-free on the sale of a house? Because this person owned it, and this person owned that one.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go about doing it? Do we get $500,000? Well, it's all about other issues. So commingling finances, whether it's being the bill-paying aspect, whether it's the assets. And then the other problem is, in some cases, this is not your first marriage at 50, 55 or later, or whatever, getting married later in life. And you have children from a previous marriage. Maybe your new spouse has children from a previous marriage. You, the assets that you've built up, you'd kind of like to them to go to your kids, but if something happens to you, but you also want to take care of your new spouse, and the commingled budget's going to be a lot easier to handle things together while you're both here. But if you die or she dies, that budget that you've created together may not work very well. So there's a lot of questions that need to be put forward and discussed. And the biggest issue is communication. And that's the hardest part. Everything's all rosy. Everything's all fun and games and all, you know, all of a sudden, now we got to get back and basically kill the buzz by talking about money.
You got to talk about finance. You got to talk about who gets what, who's getting what after somebody's gone. So now let's say you haven't been married and you've built up, you got a home, maybe you got a vacation home or something. You got assets, you got stocks, you got your own retirement accounts, your 401k, whatever it is. And this all belongs to you, your home, your furniture, and everything like that. Now you get married.
Okay, now it doesn't all belong to you, depending on what it is.
Right.
In many cases, a lot of the assets that you're bringing into the marriage can be kept separate, with the exception of your retirement account, your 401k, things of that nature. As soon as you're married, they are the de facto, your new spouse is the de facto primary beneficiary. Whether you put their name on it or not, if you leave, you know, you leave your kids on it, you leave your family on it, whatever the case may be, they may not get it because the new spouse is going to be the de facto primary beneficiary. The only way to name somebody other than this new spouse as your beneficiary is get them to sign that it's okay. Redo the beneficiary assignment after the date of marriage and have the spouse sign a waiver saying, I understand I'm giving up my rights to this, and they're going to name somebody else as a beneficiary.
And there's a buzzkill, by the way, in many, many respects. Trying to bring
come
that up.
Come home from the honeymoon and slap that paper down?
Exactly. Hey, honey, listen, you know, I know you expected to get this, but I'm going to ask you to sign your rights away.
Now, whether they expected to get it or not, it's not going to be a fun discussion. So that's why these are the things that need to be kind of looked at. How are the bills going to be? I mean, if we've got two equal incomes, it's not as difficult as if you've got one disparate, you know, one high income, one low income, and that low income person is, you know, getting married not just for the love, but also because they're somebody's going to actually be able to help take care of them. And so what happens if the person who has the high income and the assets wants to give those assets to
somebody else,
their kids or something?
Yeah.
Now, if you're coming into it in the very first marriage, you don't have kids and that what they call baggage, it's a lot easier to integrate the finances because now this person is the only person in your life that really matters compared to having kids and a new spouse.
How do they determine, and I know you're not a lawyer or anything like this, but how do they determine? You come into a marriage, you both come into a marriage, you've each got your own set of stuff that you brought in your wagon or whatever to the marriage. And so the stuff that's in your wagon is pretty much yours to keep. But now all of a sudden you start getting stuff together, and so some of it now belongs to you. I mean,
well, it depends on the titling. It depends on the state you live in. Some states, community property states, everything that's created and purchased basically after the marriage is going to be considered community property. Assets that you bring into the marriage that are treated and commingled, and it may not have both names on it, but you know, you're treating it and you're funding the entire life out of these brokerage accounts and everything else, it can become a quasi-community property. In states that aren't community property, it's a little bit easier to keep them separate. But now we're going to go look at titling. Whose name is on it? We're assuming that if it's all in her name, all in his name, that those are now separate assets of that individual, unless they put it into a joint account. So you have to look at what state you live in. Do you live in a community property state? Many of the western United States are community property, but not all. Oregon, being a main holdout there on the West Coast, Oregon is still a separate property state. So how you deal, and the other side of it is, so you're going to get married, and maybe you move into a different state because that person lived across the border in a different state. Maybe
and now you're going from
you live in Washington State and this wonderful person you found lives in Oregon, right across the Columbia River there, and you decide to you move states, okay? You went from a community to a separate property state or a separate property to a community property state. These all need to be taken into consideration when commingling households.
Yes, and again, it really has to do with the actual act of marriage, the legal certificate of marriage. And I know that there are people out there who say, you know, I'd love to get married, but why don't we just not get married and we'll each have our, you know, we won't have this legal contract that's going to mess things up. All right, we got to take a break here. 877 Planner. Something else I wanted to get into. In fact, I think what we're going to do, Rosie in Atlanta has a couple of questions on the very thing that we're talking about, Professor Plum. And it has to do also with something I wanted to get into, which had to do with debt.
You want to get into debt? That's easy to do.
Oh, listen, I'm sure it's easy to do. If you walk into a marriage in debt and somebody else doesn't have debt, what does that create besides potential problems? So we'll talk about that. Rosie, hang on. Hey, we still have two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Call now with your money questions. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. If you go to wealthed.com, our website, you can send us an email right there at the Find Your Answer link. And something else you can do right there, besides the many, many other things at wealthed.com, is to find out where the Brain Trust is going to be. If you're sitting there listening or watching and you're saying, I'd love to meet Professor Plum and anybody else who's associated with the show, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, and talk about my money, you can do so. Check the different locations, which you'll find at wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. There's a very good chance that wherever you're watching or listening, you'll be able to come see the Brain Trust live and in person. They have a question and answer period right after the big presentation. And Professor, it is on retirement income challenges, strategies, and that kind of thing. Things that people need to think about, specifically strategies to make sure that you don't run out of money before you run out of time.
The presentation is based on retirement income strategies. But the question and open period is open to whatever financial questions you have.
Exactly. So
you don't have to be at retirement age to get something out of it.
No. In fact, you should be thinking about this. I mean, if you're at retirement age, yeah, that's for you. But you should actually be thinking about this stuff 10, 15 years ahead of time, I would think. So any challenges, questions, comments that you have, you can bring them with you. Again, you go to wealthed.com, our website, and there that's right where you're going to find where we're going to be, wealthed.com. And oddly enough, all of this is free. That's very cool part. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. I was going to ask you about debt with regard to coming into marriage, but I'm going to have Rosie in Atlanta ask that because she's been hanging on. She's got a question, I believe, on this very topic. Hello, Rosie.
Hey, you guys. Yes, that is actually, it's crazy. I was watching the show and you started talking about it and I realized, oh my gosh, this actually applies to me.
Well, good. Let's hear your situation. What do you got?
Well, I got married at 40 and my husband is 48. And he has like about $10,000 worth of medical debt. So I'm curious to know whether or not that, if my name is not on any of that and it's not on his accounts, am I responsible for any of that now? And would I be responsible for any of that if anything happens to him?
Well, since it happened before the marriage, it's all in his name. It didn't have anything to do with you. You shouldn't be responsible for it. So don't put your name on any of his cards. Don't refinance anything to pay it off with your name and his name on it. Unless it's just a horrible expense from an interest rate environment. That should be his, and unfortunately, if it happens, if something happens to him, that should be his, and it should go away at his passing because it's all his debt. So now, debt has a twofold issue when it comes to marriage. One is, whose debt is it, and how are we going to pay this off? How is that going to impact, if I'm the one that's coming into the marriage without the debt, how is that debt going to impact our life together, where a big chunk of their income may be going towards paying down this debt that I had nothing to do with? It happened long before. And so my income is going to be basically funding the entire or much of the marriage. That's one issue. A lot of people don't care for that. In fact, they'll even wait until the other party can get at least close to being out of debt. The other side of it is just more from an emotional. John said we're not going to talk about marriage counseling, but this is going to have to play into that role. Why is this person in debt? Now, you mentioned medical debt. Sometimes there's just no way around that, obviously. It wasn't their choice. It wasn't a financial issue other than, they may not have had really good insurance. But so that one I'm not too worried about. But a lot of times we see people coming into marriages and you've got somebody with a lot of debt, and it basically shows a systemic issue that they have a problem managing money and handling finances. And so how you're going to merge your finances with this person is going to be a somewhat delicate, because if you're coming in and you're pretty much a diligent saver, you know how to budget, you take care of things, and opposites attract, right? Maybe, and this person is just, hey, if there's a
is
check.
Is that your situation,
no, hers,
by the
hers
way?
Hers was medical.
I know hers is medical, but I'm saying, are you?
Or his was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, is this, is it where you're more, pay off the debt, Rosie, and this other person is, other than the medical, did they have any other debts coming in, or was that it?
Well, I'm definitely the more financially minded of the two of us, and so. But in this situation, I'm kind of taking the stance that this is your debt, so this is your responsibility. You pay this off, but obviously that affects how much income we have.
For other things,
right?
So, for the joint life together,
right?
I mean, if they're putting a large chunk of their paycheck every week, month, however often they're paid, into that, it does kind of put a crimp on things. As long as you know about it going
right
into the marriage before the I do's, then you're ready for it. You have a mental ability to look at it. Unfortunately, a lot of people go into marriage and it's all rosy. Sorry, Rosie, but it's all joy
I've
and happy.
Never heard that before.
yeah, first time ever.
And they don't actually look into the deeper issues of finance, because, like we talked about earlier, money is a buzzkill when it comes to a relationship in a lot of cases. And they don't want to ruin that warm feeling that they have with this new person by talking about finances until after they say I do. And then they find out, oh my gosh, this person is a complete freak when it comes to money. They don't have a clue, or they're and all this other thing. So these are that communication that I talked about before. You knew about it. You knew what was happening. You agreed, basically, kind of talking to each other, that it was their debt and it was their responsibility, but in doing so you also knew that your income was going to be more of the household income,
right,
just because of the way things were going. So it's a communication issue, but you shouldn't be responsible for it if unfortunately the Mack truck finds them way too soon.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
All right, does that help you out, Rosie?
It does. Thank you, guys.
All right, take care. Thanks for watching and listening. Yeah, I can see it's a concern, and that's something I did want to bring up too. You have somebody who's, you really would love to get married to this person, and sometimes you don't find out till after the marriage.
But, and that's a problem, because you need to find these
right,
things out
and,
before.
And you find out. In fact, that's something else that some of these millennials are having, because one or both can come into a marriage with $40,000 or more of student loan debt.
Student loan debt is a huge one right now. I have a couple, this isn't marriage later in life, but I have a couple kids that are getting married. One got married last year, two are getting married this year. And they're going through a process. I mean, before they got married last year, they threw everything on the table and said, here's all the assets we have, here's the incomes we have. And they went through and created budgets looking forward and understanding what each other's credit ratings were. They understood what each other's incomes were, how much debt there was or wasn't. And so they knew it. It was very much an open book going into it. So they knew what they were expecting when they did their I do's going forward.
And yeah, but wait till you actually get into it and they start doing it after a few years.
Well, everything changes. It's a work in progress at all times.
It's going to be, and you're going to find out that everybody. Here's the other thing: spending priorities. Some people are more savers. Rosie was, I think she said she was probably more financially whatever.
She carries the burden heavier. Yeah.
Right, but some want to be savers. The others say, hey, I want to spend. Well, this is how you got into debt in the first place.
and so that's why understanding. That's why at least seeing the picture before you buy it, understanding all aspects, not just the fun aspects of the individual that you're dating, but all the aspects of the individual you're dating come into play, because you're buying the whole picture. You're not just, getting the pretty stuff. And so you need to know everything. And it helps. Now, unfortunately, it can also hurt a relationship. But when would you rather have the relationship hurt, before or after the marriage?
I mean, once the documents are signed, once the marriage is recorded in the county recorder's office and it's all there, I mean, you're pretty much, that's it right there.
It's
going to take a lot of legal stuff to get out of it.
It is a lot easier merging the households, like you were talking about the people in their 50s that are getting married for the very first time. That's actually a lot easier to merge than the people that are in the 50s getting married for the second or more times, and they have children from previous marriages, and that becomes much more difficult.
There's one more aspect I want to cover on this when we come back that has to do with Social Security and widow's benefits, because those two things do actually go together. That and your phone calls. More lines are open right now, 877-PLANNER. Any questions you have, you get. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, talking with you, at you, to you, for you, about you. You just got to give us a call and ask your money questions. We do have some lines open right now at 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We will get to some emails shortly. If you want to add to the stack, I'll remind you again, it's wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. You go to the Find Your Answer link, and we will read your emails here and answer them, of course, on the program. Now, wrapping up this idea of marriage later in life, and again, there are a ton of ways, and we can't certainly cover all of them. But one of the big ones, I think, Professor Plum, has to do with, and more confusing things, has to do with
Social Security.
And, I mean, you have spousal and ex-spousal, which we can talk about, but maybe more prevalent is the widow/widower benefits, because the age at which you get remarried or don't get remarried is
Social Security has a lot to do with the age of when you get remarried, but also has to do with what benefit that you're actually receiving. And so there are different benefits, obviously, from Social Security, disability, retirement, and widow and widower's benefits being the main ones. And so from a ex-spouse or new marriage spouse, what are you entitled to? Well, if everybody's still alive, when you get remarried to somebody, you are tied to that person for benefits at this point. You no longer are eligible for benefits from your ex if you have an ex. Even if you had a qualifying 10-year marriage, you're 68 years old and you get remarried. You've been receiving a spousal benefit since you were 62. You get remarried, the spousal retirement benefit, it has issues with remarriage at any age. That's different, though, than widow or widower's benefit. If you are receiving a widow or widower's benefit and you get remarried, that one doesn't go away. The only reason that one would go away is if the new benefit that you're eligible to because of the new spouse is higher than the current one. So you can maintain. So how you go about looking at your finances, some people will look at it and say, well, unfortunately, I'm a widow, I'm a widower, I'm receiving a benefit at 60, 61, 62, and I'm getting remarried. And do I get to continue to receive that? The answer would be yes. I'm not a widow, I'm an ex, and I'm receiving a spousal retirement benefit at 62, 63, 64, and then I get remarried. And so we're looking at our budget, you know, this person's bringing in this much and you're bringing in that much, but that's a spousal benefit? That could go away. It will go away. Because they're different types of benefits.
So let's just be clear. You become, let's say, a wife loses her husband and
she's a widow.
She's now a widow. She is entitled, let's say, to widow's benefits from Social Security.
But widow's benefits are not eligible. You're not eligible for a widow or widower's benefit until you reach age 60. So if you get remarried before age 60, you have not reached an age of eligibility. And if you're not eligible for the benefit when you get remarried, you don't have access to that benefit anymore. So if you get married, and I've seen people get married at 59 and, you know, closer to the 60 mark, and if they would have just waited a couple more months, they would have potentially been able to get a benefit from their late spouse that could have been added into the mix and going forward. But because they got married at 58, 59, that benefit is no longer eligible for as long as this new marriage lasts. And so understanding where the incomes are coming from, understanding what may or may not happen to those incomes once the marriage takes place. Basically, if you get married before the age of 60, then you lose all attachments to the ex or the late spouse's benefits for as long as this new marriage lasts. If you get married after the age of 60, now it depends on whether or not you are eligible for a widow's benefit or a retirement benefit from that individual. The widow's benefit will continue. The retirement benefit will not. Now, what if you get married after age 60 and then then the person passes away, your ex passes away. You got married after 60, but you weren't eligible for a widow's benefit when you got remarried. So if the ex dies after the marriage, you're still not eligible for it. But if the ex dies before the new marriage, but after age 60, now you're eligible forever.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Okay, so
it's all about what were you eligible for on the day you got married? If you were eligible for the widow's benefit.
You're talking about married, you're saying remarried.
Remarried, the second time.
Yes, this is the one, and is it because you lost your husband or your spouse, let's say, through death or divorce? Because one...
Well, that dictates, through death, that's a widow issue.
Yes.
Through divorce, if they're still alive, now we're only dealing with a retirement issue, a spousal retirement benefit.
Right.
So we're talking about these two major benefits, the spousal retirement benefit or the widower's benefit. One of them can continue if you get remarried, as long as you were eligible for it before you got remarried. One of them is going to stop regardless of your age when you get remarried.
Okay, you got somebody in their late 50s. Let's call her a woman. She's widowed, and she's thinking about getting married. But she knows, because she's checked into it, that she will be eligible at age 60 for a widow's benefit from her ex-spouse, all right? So we'll say that her late spouse, yes.
Oh, it could be late or late ex.
Okay,
whichever.
But we'll just say her late spouse. She knows she's going to be getting a benefit after age 60. She's 59 and a half, let's say, and she's thinking, there's a guy here, and we're really thinking of getting married. The better choice for her, if she wants to be able to take that widow's benefit and keep it,
yeah,
would be to wait until after age 60, start receiving
the widow's benefit,
and then...
Even use that to pay for the new wedding.
And then get married.
Yes.
And the reason is because she can get married and still
continue
collect.
To receive that.
But if she got married at age 59, 59 and a half...
59 and 11 months.
And 11 months.
No access.
And the reason is because she had not started receiving any widow's benefit.
She was not eligible to receive the benefit.
Right.
When she got married. That eligibility issue for widow and widower's benefit is very important. Were you eligible? Not had the person died, and are you waiting to be eligible? Are you actually eligible to start receiving a benefit?
Do you have to be receiving it too?
I mean, believe so.
I would suggest that you probably do. That, you can't be eligible and then get married and then say, I'd like to apply for widow's benefit.
The one that's confusing for me and that I have not gotten a perfect answer on yet is, what if I'm still working? I'm 61, 62 years of age. I'm a widower, and I'm technically not eligible for a benefit because I'm still working. I'm not eligible for any benefit because I'm still working. But I'd like to get remarried, but I'd also like to get the widower's benefit. I'm not eligible. If I get remarried and then later quit,
right.
I'm pretty sure I lose my eligibility for that widow's benefit, even though the marriage was after age 60, because I technically wasn't eligible, but I have not gotten a perfect answer on that.
Okay. Well, but suffice to say, if you get remarried as a widow or widower after age 60, you will not be, you could potentially be able to keep your widow's benefit.
If you're receiving it, you're definitely going to be able to keep it.
You're going to be able to keep it. Now, same is not true for now ex-spouses.
It's the same is true for ex-spouses. If you had a qualifying marriage, all the rules are the same. If you had a qualifying marriage, got divorced, but then your ex died.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm talking about it for spousal benefits.
Oh, spousal benefits are completely, they are different.
Yes.
If you get remarried, or when you get remarried, it doesn't matter when, the spousal benefits that you're collecting from the ex, gone. You're now tied to this new person.
Yes.
So hopefully their benefits are equal to or greater than what you were already receiving. Well, I mean, isn't that why you got married? You get more money? No, I'm kidding. I had somebody tell me once, the first time you get married is for...
Love.
The second time's for money. And I don't know that, but that's what they told me.
Okay, well, I'll take your word for it. I don't know about that. So just to be clear, on the ex-spouses, you're collecting an ex-spouse's benefit.
Well, everybody's still alive.
Everybody's still alive. You're collecting a benefit. You're 63, 64, whatever it is.
Get remarried.
And you decide, I'm going to get remarried. You now marry a new husband or wife. All of a sudden,
you're tied to that new husband or wife.
And you cannot receive those ex-spouse or spousal benefits anymore from your ex-spouse.
That was severed.
Right. Until such time as that second marriage ends, either in death or divorce.
And then you get to choose whatever benefit suits you best. If it's the ex-spouse's retirement benefit, mm-hmm. if it's the second ex-spouse's retirement spousal benefit, or if it's your own. You get to pick and choose which one's better. That's only assuming that you were at least 62 years of age.
That's why I made them
by the end of 2015. Because if you aren't 62 years of age by the end of 2015, you don't have a choice. You have to take whichever one is higher. You can't let your own grow and do other things.
Well, that's my next question was going to be, do you have to apply for your own first, whether you're full retirement age or not?
If you are, we're talking about the spousal retirement benefit, not
yes.
widow's benefits.
Yes.
Yes, if you are not 62 by the end of 2015, there's no case where you can choose to take a lower benefit to allow your own benefit to grow.
You take yours first, and then
whatever. You look at whatever else is available, and if it's bigger, you can have it, but otherwise, no.
No, so you're taking your own, and if the other one is bigger, you're going to take the difference between that and their benefit. You got all that?
62 by the end of 2015 gave you options.
I know you got questions. You give us a call. 877-PLANNER, our number. Lines are open. 877-752-6637. What is your individual situation? Talk to us about it. Ask us your money questions. We'll answer them for you. We'll tell you which is the best path to take. Live right here. Bucket Strategy Investing. We're here for you every day. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Take advantage of the Brain Trust. You ask us your questions on the phones. You ask us questions through email. Whichever works best for you, we're here to answer those questions for you. 877-PLANNER. Emails, you go to our website, Wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com, and send it right there. Also, workshops. And we've been talking bucket strategy. We've been talking retirement income strategies and challenges for a good part of the program today. And if you want to learn more about these things, we got a bunch of workshops coming up. We still got some left. Done a few. We got a few more coming up. They're on Saturdays, and they're at different locations around the country. So if you want to find out where the Brain Trust is going to be next, or if they're going to be anywhere that you happen to be, you go to our website, WealthEd.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com. You can sign up there. Any number of them, whichever ones you want to sign up. And by the way, bring your money questions, because we do talk in these workshops about retirement income strategies. That's kind of the main focus. But afterwards, there's plenty of time, both during the program and after the program, to ask whatever questions that you have. Maybe you have questions that either aren't addressed or something that you need more information on. It's a great time to do that. Tax questions, savings questions, Social Security questions, retirement, annuities, insurance, whatever it is, they'll talk about it. You just got to go ask the questions. So once again, WealthEd.com. Check it out, WealthEd.com. Okay, so some trivia for you here. This is, boy, they send me very few things. Startup Genome Project. I don't know. They got my address somehow. But the trivia for today actually makes, it's interesting. 90% of startup businesses launched in the U.S. of A. fail, primarily due to self-destruction and not due to competitive pressures. Now, I wonder how they figured that out. I wonder how you quantify something like that.
I want to know how many of those are restaurants.
Well, probably quite a few. But startup businesses, I mean, what? These are the kind of businesses that that you have in your garage or something, and you decide to do it. Now, I would assume this includes businesses that last maybe a month or two and never go anywhere.
That's a startup. A lot of them are, fail because they're undercapitalized, and the owner, just has these dreams of being self-employed and believes that it's just going to happen, and everything's rosy until they find out it's maybe a little more difficult than they thought, and it's more costly than they thought, and they don't have the capital to make it work long enough to make it profitable. I mean, a lot of companies, I remember, they get bigger only because they survive the first couple of years on something other than the profits of the business.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, does it take a whole ton of money to start up a
business? Depends on the business.
I mean, I've known people who have just sort of done things on a whim, and word gets around, and there's very little cost to it, and then
depends
next thing
on the business.
Know, yeah, they're selling some kind of a product.
Right, but
or
when you've got a large capital outlay up front, like redoing a restaurant, bringing in stoves and hiring staff and doing things if you have to, you've got some debt service maybe, or you put out money and it takes a little while to bring money in. And if you cannot hold on long enough to get the word out, to get the people buying the product, to get the people coming in the store, whatever it is, then unfortunately at some point many businesses just say, you know what, I can't do it. I got to go back to work, real work. I mean, not real work, but, you know, employee
type work.
Business
didn't work. I got to go be an employee somewhere. Yeah.
I got to find a job.
Well, there you go. Okay. 90%, that's a whole lot, but hey, you know what? For the 10%, I guess, that do work, that do make it, it can be very lucrative. Can be.
Or it can be sustaining.
Sustaining. Let's put it that way. All right. 877-PLANNER. I got time for, I think, one more email here. Once again, if you want to email us, you go to our website, wealthed.com. We're going to move down the list to Eric in Olympia, Washington. Here we go again. We should cover more of this, I suppose, on this new law that's going to be taking effect or has taken effect in some cases. Eric in Olympia, Washington. I'm not yet old enough to get full Social Security benefits. What do I have to do to be able to file and suspend or receive a restricted application when I turn 66? Do I need to do something before the end of April 2016? I want to not take my benefit at 66, but take half of my spouse's, and then at age 70, take the higher amount for my own benefit after waiting. Do I lose that because of the new law changes? Well, obviously he's not 66 yet. Well, we don't know how old he is currently.
I don't know how old you are, but I may have some good news, because the issue is, you said, what do you have to do to file and suspend? And then you outlined the strategy that you wanted to employ. You wanted to take half of your spouse's benefit without applying for your own and wait until age 70. So you don't have to do anything by April of this year, because that is not the file and suspend strategy. The file and suspend strategy is where you file for your own, suspend it so that somebody else can take a benefit from you, not the other way around, and you don't take anything until 70. Now, unless you can figure out a way to turn 66 in the next couple of months and be able to voluntarily suspend your benefit before the end of April of this year, there's nothing you can do about the file and suspend. But don't worry, you didn't want to do that anyway. You wanted to do the restricted application. And your ability to do the restricted application has nothing to do with anything that you can or cannot do at this moment. You are either old enough or not old enough to do the restricted application. You can't change your age. So unless you are going to be at least 62, or were at least 62 by the end of December 2015, you're not old enough to do what you want to do. But if you are 62 right now and turned 62 before the end of December 15, or before the end of December 2015, you have the ability to do a restricted application from your spouse's benefit, assuming your spouse has applied for a benefit. But there's nothing you have to do. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. You are either old enough or not. Were you 62 at the end of 2015? If you were, then when you turn 66, you can apply for only a spousal benefit from your spouse's work record without applying for your own, leaving yours to grow till 70. Of course, to have that option, your spouse has to have applied for their own benefit. If your spouse is more than 4 years younger than you, it's not really going to matter, because they haven't applied for a benefit yet. And you cannot get a spousal benefit no matter how old you are if the worker that you're trying to take the benefit from has not applied for the benefit.
Yeah, we don't try to make everything about Social Security on the show, even though we do get a lot of calls and emails on it. But because those laws that took effect or were put into effect last, November. I guess it was, and are starting to affect more and more people, we should probably try to clear that up. So if you have questions on that, you can certainly ask them of us on the phone or on the email or at any one of the workshops that I mentioned are coming up. So if you need the brain trust off the air, ask these questions, talk to Professor Plum or any of the Lucia Capital Group brain trust advisors across the country. Their phone number off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.